Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector, an independent financial advisor, or an institutional investor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. In this episode, we are joined by Martin Ackerman, the chief economist at Citadel, to unpack what has been a volatile yet surprisingly resilient year for global markets. We will explore how Citadel interprets the shifting macro landscape, why the risk of a global recession has receded, and what it means to box clever as we move into 2026. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ruan. Thanks for the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Let's start with the global picture. At the start of 2025, markets were upbeat. But by April, sentiment had shifted sharply when President Donald Trump announced his new tariffs. Now, as the year draws to a close, the data seems to tell a different story. From your perspective, what have been the biggest surprises of the year so far?
Now, you know, we at Citadel talk about the future will surprise, and very often people take that as negative surprises. But I think this year we actually had a positive one. Because if you go back to the beginning of this year, you know, the outlook was very gloomy in terms of the global economy. And it actually got even more gloomy when President Trump announced the tariffs in April. In fact, at that time, the consensus view was that the world is going to enter a recession, leading by the U.S. to enter that first. And now if we fast forward to where we are right now, it seems like the world is definitely more resilient for a number of reasons. So, you know, the world is definitely still facing a number of headwinds, but the impact from what was expected in April turned out to be probably on the too negative side. And if we look at markets right now all around the world, you know, they are telling us a very different story. I think most people didn't expect the beginning of this year, especially standing in April, that we will see markets testing new all-time highs on a daily basis. That is a bit of an upside surprise that we can unpack later today as well.
If we break that down by region, and let's start with the US, growth has held up better than many expected, but tariffs and inflation remain a concern. How do you see the next phase of the US cycle unfolding?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, in April, the world expected that given those high tariffs, the US is likely to enter a recession. Where we stand right now, it seems like that's not going to be the case. They will keep slowing, probably towards what we call capacity growth, and also coming off quite a high base. You know, we came into this year with US growth north of 3%, and given the headwinds that we are facing now, we're probably going to cool down to about 2%. What are the main reasons for the fact that the US is now seems to be more resilient? I think a lot of people underestimate the impact of the AI technology sector in the US. So that sector is still sucking in a lot of capital all over the world. It makes the US just so much more productive and more competitive compared to some of their peers around the world. Yes, the US consumer is slowly coming under pressure. Inflation is sticky and is likely to increase on the back of the tariffs. And we are seeing a job market that is cooling. That is exactly why the Fed has been in a bit of a rock and a hard place. They want to actually keep rates where they are, given the sticky inflation, but they're well aware of the slowdown on the job market, and that's why they chose to start cutting rates. So yeah, the US, I think, avoided the biggest part of the slowdown because of still a resilient consumer, the bigger part that AI and AI investment is playing in supporting US economic growth. And then maybe finally, you know, given that the US is a service-based economy, the goods part of the economy, the manufacturing part that's being impacted by tariffs are actually quite small. And that's part of the reason why the impact's being much less than expected standing in April this year.
Martin, what about across the Atlantic? You know, Europe and the UK have both had sluggish recoveries. What does their outlook look like to you?
Yeah, so we've got, we had this deviation in growth over the last couple of years where the US kept on growing, like I've said, north of 3%. for very different or specific reasons, or rather it's the tech investments that's supporting the economy. But also during COVID, the US was one of the economies in the world that definitely had more fiscal spend that ended up in consumer pockets. So for a long time, they had quite a huge amount of excess savings that enabled the US consumer to weather high interest rates. If we compare that to the other part, the other side of the Atlantic, Europe's been facing a lot of headwinds. You know, they've been battling with the higher costs from energy, given the war that's going on in Russia and Ukraine. They are very unproductive compared to a country like the US. And then, you know, some of their major industries like the auto industry being swamped by just more competitive products from China. So as a result of that, you know, the Europeans, you can add to that the UK as well, it's been in a growth slump, basically flirting with recession. And it seems like at this point in time, as the US is slowing, those economies are slowly picking up and their growth is basically converging. So both sides of the Atlantic, we do think over the next year or two, we'll probably get closer to capacity growth. What triggered some of that growth in Europe? Well, a lot of that's being fiscal spent. In other words, the European governments deciding to spend more through fiscal side of the economy. Now, we've seen that. That's not coming for free. It comes at a cost. So the deficits are also rising and borrowing costs. So the long-term bond yields in Europe is rising as well. Now, what one needs to keep in mind is that the biggest part of this fiscal spend is defense spending. So where they need to get their defense budget as a percentage of GDP closer to 5% given the NATO commitment. And that is a concern because, you know, unless there's a war, touch wood, that's not something we hope for, but then that defense spending is going to be a once-off. And then this kind of tailwind that they are seeing growth might start to taper quite soon. Just on that also, it's quite interesting if one look at how European markets performed this year relative to the US. You know, they actually slightly outperform, and one would think that that might be due to Trump policies or the US going into a slowdown phase. But it actually all boils down to how well defense companies did in Europe, given all this fiscal spend that's coming into the pipeline. So there's a very specific reason why that market performed so well.
Martin, then there's China, which has faced a challenging transition away from investment-led growth. How do you assess China's role in the global economy right now?
Yeah, China is very important. You know, China is the second biggest economy. China is so important in terms of global trade. If we go back to the US and trade tariffs, you know, in the early 80s, China and other emerging markets only traded about 25% with each other. Where we stand today, 50% of the trade is with other emerging markets. And with what Trump is doing in terms of his policies, it's soon going to be 60% plus. So it just shows that the whole emerging market world is becoming less resilient on the US, more resilient on their own. They still trade with the US, but we've seen a lot of diversification away from the US, especially now with the tariffs. And that makes the world probably a little bit more resilient and sustainable, so that we rely on more engines of growth and not just the US. But having said that, China is facing their own challenges as well. You know, I think long gone is the days where they are going to grow 10% plus. They've got a aging population. They've got many structural headwinds. In China, you know, the typical Chinese investor actually is very low invested in equity. So they're more property investors. And that's because, you know, given the size of the listed equity market, they end up more in property. And with the property market cooling so much, you know, in line with that, we've seen quite a dip in consumer confidence in China as well. And that put quite a break on consumption. And that's exactly what the government over there wants to achieve. They want to move away from a growth model of infrastructure and exports towards more consumer growth, like we see in countries like the US and most of Europe, which are consumer-based economies. So they are facing some structural headwinds. And as a result of that, you know, they probably will grow less than 5% this year. Our number is about 4.5%. But that's still, you know, a very high number for an economy that size. And it is very important in terms of the relationship with their trading partners.
Martin, let's bring it closer to home. You have said in some of your investment notes that South Africa is showing quiet progress beneath the noise. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you go back to that, the future will surprise. Then, you know, to be honest, beginning of this year, when we couldn't table a budget, we were very concerned about Trump's stance on Africa, South Africa, the trade agreements, AGOA. I think most people thought that it's going to be quite a difficult year. Then two things basically happened. You know, on the back of the big, beautiful tax bill in the US, the world started to be concerned about how they're going to finance that, number one, and whether the dollar can keep its value in an environment where, you know, they're running massive deficits. So with the dollar starting to slip, we started to see gold running very, very hard as demand for an alternative currency picked up. We've seen quite a big switch into gold from central banks. And at the same time, you know, Trump decided to scrap subsidies on electric vehicles. That's probably why he and Elon Musk started to have a little bit of a fight. Obviously, Elon didn't like that. And that triggered the run in platinum, because platinum goes into the exhaust system of normal combustion engines. So given a decision that's been made on the other side of the world, despite our gloomy outlook on South Africa, we had a benefit of a major commodity cycle. We export one of our biggest exports are platinum, precious metals, palladium and gold. So we've seen those companies on the JSE doing extremely well. JSE, one of the best performing stock markets year to date. The Rand benefiting from that as well. So it just shows you how quickly the picture can change, where we've been bailed out, if you like, from a very strong commodity cycle. And we'll probably see some of that positive support in the medium-term budget speech later in November. But that is part of the concern. You know, this is a, we know commodity cycles, they come and go. And that's definitely not sustainable going forward. We can't bank on that only. So we still need the private sector to really come to the party, especially now that private participation is, you know, open door policy, inviting the private sector to play a bigger part. And we know that that is working. You know, if we just look at the Eskom example, load shedding, the minute private capital entered the space, we started to see some real results on that front. So yes, you're 100% right. Suddenly the outlook for SA is slightly better. And who would have thought it's going to be as a result of some policy changes in the US that we see this tailwind.
Speaking of tailwinds, and there are still a few major headwinds from weak consumer confidence to sluggish productivity. How do those factors limit our growth potential?
Yeah, so I think that's a good question. You know, we've seen, for example, in the second quarter of this year, 3% plus growth. So it just shows that this economy can still grow at those kind of levels. First time in how many quarters where we've seen most industries contributing positive, from mining, manufacturing, agriculture, you name it. So that might be an early sign that some of the policy reform is taking place and support higher growth. We are seeing early signs of the logistical network turning to the right direction. And we already mentioned the load shedding that's been resolved to a large extent. But having said that, unfortunately, we're still stuck in what I call a per capita recession, because our population is growing at 1.5%. Yet for the last couple of years, our growth can't get higher than 1%. And the reasons for that are twofold. The one is that we've got a lack of investments, foreign direct investments, and also fixed capital formation locally, where, you know, companies are just not investing fast enough to actually make do the decay that we've seen in our infrastructure over the last couple of decades. And then our productivity, you know, when you talk about potential growth in any economy, it is basically about the growth in the population. So how many people do you have, and how fast are they growing? Your labor force, so to speak, and how productive are those people? And when you add those two together, you get to what we call capacity growth. So as an example, in the US, their productivity at the moment is quite high, given the boon from AI. And they've got a growing population, not natural, but through legal immigration. And that's why their capacity growth is still 2% plus. If you think about China, their productivity grows around about 5-odd%. So that speaks to their growth numbers at this point in time. But unfortunately, in South Africa, our productivity number is negative. So if you think about a population growing 1.5, then you have negative productivity. That brings you to the 1% growth where we've been stuck. And productivity, labor productivity, it's more than just, it boils down to more than just working hours and whether your labor force is, for a better term, lazy. It is about whether they are able to be productive. And I think there's a lot of red tape in our labor force in terms of the hiring procedure, firing people. So it's very difficult for business to operate with labor, and that adds to lower productivity levels, which is a very important policy that's currently also in the pipeline in terms of labor reforms that will take place. So yeah, that's the other issue that we are facing that keeping us from reaching our potential growth. So in the next phase of the government of national unity, you know, it's not just opening the doors for the private sector to come and fix a lot of the structural problems, but it is also to address reforms around legislation in terms of doing business from labor to registration of a company to registration for tax. All of those things are headwinds that we can simplify that will definitely add to South Africa seeing much higher growth going forward.
Martin, looking ahead, and you've spoken about the need to box clever in inverted commas in one of your investment notes. As we move into 2026, what does that mean to box clever in practical terms for investors?
Now, I think, you know, like we said, the world is definitely avoiding a recession at this point in time, but I think a soft patch is still on the table going into 2026, because we're only getting used to these tariffs and the world is transitioning from traditional trading partners to different trading partners, different trade agreements that's on the table. So there's definitely a lot of headwinds that the world is facing. We still got geopolitical issues. We still got a lot of regional tension that's unresolved. So in an environment like that, you know, one needs to be quite aware of the risk. So focus on managing the downside, protecting your portfolio for downside risk is crucial. And that's the old rule about diversification, making sure that you've got a wide spread of assets all around the world that can protect you when there are some turbulence. Boxing clever also is about the stock market. I think in an environment like this, there's a huge debate about whether the market is expensive, overvalued. Yet there's some of those companies all around the world that's still printing very healthy earnings numbers, paying good dividends. So you need to go and select companies that's good quality, that will typically weather the storm very well in a tough environment, that's doing business all over the world, so that those companies are not only exposed to the local market. You know, in South Africa, we talk about SA Inc., you know, faces the local issues of high unemployment, high interest rates. So you need to think more broadly in terms of global exposure. And the same goes for companies in the US. Rather think about the quality global companies instead of companies that's only exposed to maybe a slowing US economy. So having the right mix of global equity in an environment where markets can come under pressure and have some steam is very, very important. And then have strategies that can protect, like I've said, any downside. Some alternative strategies like hedge funds to also make the volatility slightly less. I think that is crucial going into 2026.
Martin, as a last question, Citadel received the Raging Bull Award for the South African Fund Manager of the Year earlier this year. That recognition was about more than just returns. So how does risk management play into Citadel's philosophy?
Yeah, that is very important. You know, we always say that 90% of your return is driven by the market. Warren Buffett always said that a rising tide lifts all boats. So if you think about a year like this, you know, if you have a portfolio that returned, let's pick a number, 15%, you know, a big part of that is just markets going up, the beta effect. And then you see the skill in terms of boxing clever. So having the right companies, making the right calls, having, for example, gold exposure, that's been a phenomenal investment this year. And that really adds that you can actually outperform the market. But the most important thing for us looking after other people's money is to manage risk and also downside risk. And I think you only see that when markets are in a drawdown phase. Now, we always say that our clients need returns to eat. You know, they can't eat risk. And back to the award that we received, that's all about risk-adjusted returns. So we're very proud about that because it means that, you know, if we delivered 15%, another manager also delivered 15%, our 15% came at significantly less risk. So your risk-adjusted return is then superior. So I think even more so going into 2026, given everything that we discussed earlier, focusing on that risk and avoiding the pitfalls is very important to make sure that you can keep on generating sustainable returns.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Martin, thank you for joining us and sharing your insights on how investors can stay resilient and forward-looking in 2026. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money, Markets and Mastermind with me, editor Ruan Uster, and my producer, Vera Loba da Silva from the Citywire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please do not forget to subscribe, leave a review and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Ayono.fm. All Citywire South Africa podcasts and videos are also available on our website, so please do register and explore our multimedia content. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.